Yeah, something special, you know, something epic, blowing bangs, you know, cause if you're thugging on me, you don't want to see you smile, baby.
You want to be the reason you smile. You want to be the reason you smile. You want to be the reason you smile.
I'm getting a feeling you wanna take revenge from the conversations we have in the weird ends. You wanna discuss me in front of your lady friends. That's why it's just me and my Mercedes Benz. It all depends, maybe if we make amends, we can start from scratch. Learn to control your temper and remarks, in fact. You plan to be platonic with the hearts intact. So every time we separate, somebody's marching back. You're amazing in the sack. Eyes flutter like you're Asian, but you're black. God bless whoever gave you all of that. You stand in front of the back, you understand why you stare like that. It ain't a photo with toes, the Lord knows. So good enough to miss award shows.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is comedian Tanola Oliver, your performance and intimacy coach, the owner of the Candy Shop Comedy Club, baby. And this is part two of the Making of the Mogul podcast, where we are having a dialogue about culture versus race. And, you know, this is a dialogue that probably will never even take place in an area like New York, right? I live in the Midwest. And so the dialogue about racism and race and cultural misappropriation, it just don't stop, right? It just doesn't stop because the environment in the Midwest is quite different, right? Than the environment on the West Coast or the environment on the East Coast. And so, and I'm from the Midwest. And so while I travel a lot, right, I live in the Midwest. And so it would be amiss for me to bury myself bury my head in the sand and pretend that I don't see that there is a demographic of people that are somewhat hurting, feeling displaced, and wanting to bring some redress to opening up the culture to demographics of people who they feel like are don't deserve. Well, I mean, to be honest, right, is at the end of the day, it's about a demographic of people feeling like they are disenfranchised. And because they are disenfranchised, then people who are privileged, right, or part of the majority don't deserve a seat at the table, right? Not on the artistry side. And so I played that particular song in the beginning because that is that that sound that you hear running in the backdrop of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. That's the type of music that my son makes. And it is a mixture between jazz and, if you listen to like Mozart, Beethoven, then it really is like a very smooth mixture of both of those sounds. And while he likes the Snoop Dogg and he likes You know, just any hip hop music that we listen to today, when he produces his artistry, it is that eclectic sound that you can hear in the back of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, that particular song I just played. But he's a saxophone player, right? And so I think, just like I am years ago, right? I was a violinist. And so I think being a musician plays a very large part in the type of music, not only that we have the ability to appreciate, but also the music that we decide to innovate, right? As a singer, my preference is country and gospel music, right? And I believe it is because of country music, you hear a lot of string instrument. It was a sidebar, but moving right along, as I do want to make sure that I make mention that my son does produce music, all right? And so let's finish having this dialogue about about cultural misappropriation and how culture and race, culture versus race, it's not synonymous, right? And hip hop and the rap industry, right? It is an industry. And so from a money-making perspective, I don't think that it is the intent of any artist to not want to see their art appreciated in various sectors of the world, in addition to different demographics of people. And again, Black people represent, and that's not even all minorities, I'm just talking about the Black dollar only. We've not yet tallied Hispanic, Latino, or Asian dollars yet. We're just talking about Black dollars alone is $1.3 trillion. So why we have the ability to sustain what we've created, right? The issue is that there is a generation of youth who are saying that non-minorities don't have a right to co-op our movement because they come with agendas and they come with motives, right? At the end of the day, right? There is, and this is coming from youth, right? And so I think myself as a parent, right? And when I look at like the Russell Simmons, and I look at 50, and I look at various artists who were cultivated in the street, right? Their art was cultivated in the street. I think what I see and what I hear, right, is that, and again, this is a dialogue that's not even taking place in certain geographical locations. I'm just from the Midwest, right? And that's why it caught my attention. I didn't get an opportunity to see the person that that posted it. And I see a lot of posts, a lot of people, you know, will inbox me things and of that nature. I didn't even get the opportunity to see if that individual was from what part, geographical location of the world. I wish I could come across it again so that I could go and see what area they were from. But I think the issue is when you see Russell Simmons' kids, right? Or if you see 50 Cent, one of his younger kids, right? Who has no affiliation or experience with street culture, then you have a demographic of people that are saying, well, why would you shut me out, right? And your kids were not a part of that. But I don't think, like, again, it's the whole culture of it that I don't think they understand that their kids were grafted in because their parents paid the price, right? And so it's still privilege, right? It's just a privilege that the world is not accustomed to, right? And so I think it was Charlamagne Tha God, who is a DJ, not a DJ, but a host on the Breakfast Club morning show. He wrote a book called Black Privilege. And so I think what I see, right? I'm a people scientist, right? I'm a social scientist. It's what I see is there is a demographic of people who are not accustomed to seeing another demographic of people have privilege that they don't have access to. At the end of the day, that's what it is. And so when you see Russell Simmons' kids or you see Seer, right, who is Curtis's son, younger children, or you see Fat Joe and his kids, or you see any of these artists, what's his name? I follow him on social media too. Boosie. When you see his children, right? And people are like, well, these kids, they coming up in suburban areas, you know, they rich. And so why do they automatically get a part of the culture when they're more like us than they are like their parents? And so the word, right, that y'all, so mainstream made this up, right? We just pulled off from it. That the kids are grafted in or they grandfathered in, right? That's a business term, grandfathered in. And so why do they get to participate? Because their parents paid the price. Because their parents had access. Because their parents went through the struggle. And so they ain't got to be a part of the street culture. Their parents already paid that price. Now, was it a price? You know what I'm saying? Does somebody want to go out and try to replicate? I think not, right? But it's just a culture that some of us came in and came up under just because it was the part of the world, right, that we grew up in. And the children that follow are grafted and grandfathered in. Now, here is the understanding. And I gave the example of even this podcast and me representing a sector of culture by highlighting somebody else's work, right? That's what research is. Research means that I get to pick a demographic of people, huh? I get to highlight their work, huh? And I get to present it before the world in a fashion, right, that exudes character and integrity that is associated and affiliated with my brand, right? And I do that with a candor that does not dishonor the individual, right? I heard an interview on a radio show the other day, and somebody was speaking on DMX, and I was appalled because, you know, it's one thing that we continue to talk bad about people and they face while they live in, having no understanding of the life and journey of them, right? But then here this man's body ain't even cold in the ground, and somebody bringing redress to his life and doing it in a negative connotation. Somebody that looked like him, right? Somebody that come from his race and somebody that's supposed to be quote unquote from the culture, which gives me a segue into the next portion of what I want to talk about. When we talk about entitlement, I want it to be understood that entitlement is not, it is not a race issue, right? We got a lot of race issues in the world. Entitlement and culture is not one of them, right? Culture is not about a race, and entitlement is not about race. Any race or demographic of people can be considered entitled. Anytime somebody wants access to the success, progress, or journey of somebody else's that they have not matriculated in or suffered the pain or the downside or the journey, the hiccups, the roller coaster rides, the emotional distress, all of that that comes with their journey for success. Anybody that wants access to that, right? And they did not participate in that person. They wasn't right there with them, right? Right next alongside of them while they were going through that. That's called entitlement. And that can come from any demographic of people. In fact, Curtis talks a little, he does not label the word entitlement in his book. And I'm sure it is because Curtis is very careful about not introducing the black and white binary to his brand, right? His brand is very far removed and displaced from racial tension for the industry that he comes out of. Very far removed from the politics of the black and white binary. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he's from the East Coast, right? And he's from an area that was basically a melting pot, right? Anybody, any and everybody, right, were living alongside each other and either thriving, trying to thrive, trying to survive, trying to get to the top, but just cohabitating, right? And so lastly, this is the last thing that I'm going to say, and I'm done. Part of the work of my foundation is cooperative economics, because I believe that cooperative economics is the answer to a lot of the cultural and racial tension that still exists in the world. I live in a county in Ohio that used to be number two in the nation for racial segregation in housing. It is now number one in the nation, right? Regionally, number one for segregated housing. And so what is the answer to that? If you're asking, like, what are some of the projects that we're working on? And cooperative economics is part of that. But it is from a perspective of how we live and how we work. And we have to have the ability to cohabitate and the ability to coexist with one another in spaces without dishonoring and disrespecting one another, simply because we feel entitled to be a part of someone's journey or someone's success or someone's life or whatever that dynamic may be, right? And so if I'm going to, you know, do a show and I'm going to highlight a Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, then I'm not going to bring any dishonor to it. If I'm going to write a book and it's going to be a response to Dr. Jamal Bryant's book, then I'm not going to bring any dishonor to it. And it is okay sometimes not to say shit. Like, you don't always have to say something. You don't always have to be a part of something. It is really okay to sit some shit out, right? And so there are times when people bring me topics. There are times when people bring me dialogue and discussions, about hot topics, things that are really, 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 having some emphasis and focus in societal and shifting societal norms and creating paradigm shifts in certain economic demographic. I mean, things that people assume that I would have an interest in, right? But if it does not fit the vision, if it does not fit the plan that I know that God has given for me, for my life, for my son, for the legacy that I am attempting to create, for the success of the direction of our life, I sit that shit out. And I keep my mouth shut about it because I don't need to bring redress to every topic that hits mainstream media or every hot topic that some celebrity is deciding to have a dialogue about. It is really okay sometimes not to say shit, is what I'm saying. And I'm gonna close it on that note, because I believe entitlement will make us as individuals. I'm a human being. So when I say us, I'm talking about the human race, right? That's inclusive of myself. And you have to train yourself to push against the normalities of how society wants you to respond, right? Because society will push you into an agenda that has absolutely nothing to do with you by attempting to pull on the coat strings of your heart or attempting to push your buttons or whatever the take may be. And you have to be strong enough to say, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to talk about. This is my platform. And this is the direction that God has ordained for myself and for my son. And this is this and this ain't that. And that is who God has created me to be. It is okay not to say shit. Don't address it. Don't bring redress to it. Don't put nothing on it. Just don't say shit. Right? If it does not bring positivity to your brand or the functionality of the vision and the purpose that God has given you, get away from the shit and don't say shit about it. And I cannot express that enough, because again, entitlement will require us as human beings to feel like we always have to say something, particularly if other people feel like we ought to say something. But maturity, right? Maturity will say, I ain't got a dog in a fight. Not when it comes to that topic, right? And I think that's okay. And then what it does is it creates a space for people who were called to that particular area of interest to be able to rise up. It seemed like I'm going a little bit of a different direction, but this is what we call responsibility, right? As a person who has a platform, this is what we call responsibility. When we pull away, right, from the topic at hand and say, I think that people who have influence sometimes need to not say shit, so that the people that are really called to do that thing can step to their platforms and do that shit like ain't nobody else called to do that shit, because they called to do it. And it really is okay, even if you got influence, to shut up sometimes, right? And we ain't got to talk about all things all the time, particularly, right, if it's not what we called to do. And who does that better, right, than Curtis Jackson? Some shit he just don't talk about. Like, right? Like, it's buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. But you ain't gonna have him say, you not gonna hear him say shit about it. Because it ain't what he called to do. And I don't know if that's just his personality. I don't know because he didn't been coached, right? Somebody didn't coach the hell out of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, right? But whether it's the coaching of his public persona and his business profile, or if it's just his personality, I can say he is the epitome of sitting some shit out, right? And just not saying shit. And so that's that. This is this, what is this? The 13th, the 14th episode of Making Up a Mogul podcast. How and what and why do you decide not to say nothing about some shit? All right. That is the question of this particular episode. Thank you for joining the Making of a Mogul podcast, where the dream is free, but the hustle was sold separately, baby. And this is 21 questions. I'll talk with you soon. Peace.